track 11, and we come to our feature articles, and Brian will introduce these for you.
We have two feature items for you today. The first is a short one from the TNF Soundings contributor James from the Wharfdale Talking newspaper. He brings us a first-hand review of a visually impaired friendly sculpture exhibition. This Beyond the Visual exhibition, which includes works by Henry Moore, shows that appreciating art is not simply a visual pleasure.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is James reading. I've recorded a short piece about an exhibition I visited recently, which I thought would be of interest to Talking News listeners. Beyond the Visual is the UK's first major sculpture exhibition in which blind and partially sighted practitioners are central to the curatorial process and make up the majority of participating artists. Rather than treating accessibility as an add-on, the exhibition builds it into the experience from the ground up. For me, the most striking thing is that you are actively encouraged to touch the sculptures. For anyone used to galleries where hands are kept firmly behind backs, this feels quietly radical. Dark grey carpeted areas mark when a sculpture is within reach, and visitors are invited to step forward, feel surfaces, listen closely, and even engage with scent. Touching a bronze sculpture by Yorkshire icon Henry Moore, I was struck how by intimate the experience felt. The contrasting textures invited slow, careful exploration, and long after leaving the gallery, the faint metallic smell of bronze stayed on my hands. It was a reminder that sculpture can leave traces that aren't visual at all. Sound also plays a central role throughout the exhibition. Audio guides accompany every artwork, offering clear, thoughtful descriptions alongside the voices of the artists themselves. Many of the sculptures respond in different ways when touched, played, or gently struck, producing subtle sounds that heighten awareness of movement, space, and presence. The exhibition brings together 16 international artists spanning historical and contemporary works with sculptures that invite engagement through touch, sound, and smell. Gallery assistants are on hand throughout to help visitors explore the work at their own pace. Having developed some issues with my own vision in recent years, I found Beyond the Visual particularly resonant. It gently challenges the idea that sight is the primary way we experience art, and in doing so opens up a richer, more inclusive way of engaging with sculpture. Beyond the Visual at the Henry Moore Institute in Leeds opened in November and runs until the 19th of April 2026.
TNF Soundings.
We follow that with last week's Nature Diary piece from the Advertiser. It's by Mike Hitch, who describes Costa Rica's vibrant bird life. It does contain names of a lot of very unfamiliar birds. He writes, "Early last December, my wife Elaine and I were walking in the sunshine on a long sandy beach. A group of sanderlings scurried about at the water's edge. A common tern flew by. On the rocks were turnstones and a whimbrel, all very familiar. Then, however, there was a slender-billed curlew and a willet, a little egret that had green legs and was actually a juvenile little blue heron. That larger heron we could see was brown, a tiger heron. A single file of brown pelicans caught the updraft from a giant Pacific roller. A group of white-fronted parrots shouted from trees behind us. Black vultures circled above the treetops. Yes, we were back in Costa Rica. Before breakfast the next day, we were collected by our birding guide Ernesto to take us to the Guru Wildlife Refuge, one of the very first Costa Rican wildlife reserves, located on the tip of the Gulf of Nicoya, on land purchased by a German family named Schutt. We parked in a clearing just inside the forest edge, where a footpath set off to our right. At the centre of the clearing was a 20-metre black metal pole, on top of which was mounted a large nesting box. "An owl box?" my wife Elaine inquired. "No," was the reply. It's for scarlet macaws. The words hardly out of his mouth, a macaw duly arrived and disappeared inside, shortly followed by its mate. After a while they reappeared, side by side, to survey their surroundings. Not many years ago, the scarlet macaw had almost disappeared from Costa Rica as a result of habitat destruction and their capture for the pet trade, now strictly forbidden. However, as a result of enlightened ecological management and species protection, their reappearance has been clear to us over the 25 years that we've been travelling to Costa Rica. Their large size, brilliant colour, and raucous calls make them hard to miss. And why, you may ask, are the nest boxes so high and on such tall, thin poles? Well, they're to keep eggs and young safe from the white-faced capuchin monkeys, who will predate them given the least opportunity. Nothing seems to be safe from these monkeys unless perched on a very tall, slippery pole. We hadn't gone far down the track when our way over a little bridge was blocked by a tribe of about 40 Coata Mundi. We had to wait patiently while they filed across and turned off to our left. Further into the forest, the path ran beside a large pond, resplendent with water hyacinth, through which a black-bellied whistling duck was cutting a path, followed by its ducklings. In a clear area of water, a least grebe was diving repeatedly, overseen by a green heron. After pauses to admire a lineated woodpecker with its great red crown, there are 16 types of woodpecker in Costa Rica, by the way, and a turquoise-browed motmot with a long blue tail, our path was blocked again, this time by a howler monkey. It wasn't blocking the path with its body, they very rarely approached the ground, but it was showing its great displeasure of our presence by bombarding us with solid excrement and discharging copious quantities of an orange urine down through the leaves. Finally, after a surprisingly prolonged dirty protest, Ernesto judged that it must surely be running low on ammunition, and we made a rapid dash for freedom. When we reached the sea, there were facilities for us to use, which I'm sure the howler monkey would have despised. We feasted on freshly picked pineapples, dripping with sweet juice in their ripeness, which served both as late breakfast and early lunch before moving on. Heading back down the track to recover our vehicle, we paused at a stream to admire a green kingfisher perched over the water, beside which was a reassuringly small crocodile. On a branch nearby sat a black-headed trogon, resplendent in its yellow belly and green back, while a family of peccary wild pig foraged and crossed slowly in front of us. With recently obtained insider knowledge, Ernesto made a slight detour on our drive back, heading down a tiny side road. We stopped by a very unpromising area of small, scrubby trees. He alighted and peered over the barbed wire and then beckoned excitedly. Following his directions with some difficulty, we managed to spot an almost perfectly camouflaged brown bird pressed closely onto the top of a small, bare branch. Very similar in appearance to our nightjar, it was a night hawk, which hides itself during the day, not on the ground, but up on a carefully chosen branch. What local knowledge and skill that took to spot. But so ended another bird-watching day in Costa Rica.